I believed nobody. Everyone who came to the ghost story, I was like, man, you guys are so bored. Like, can you really be that bored that this is what you decide to do with your day? And now I'm one of those people. So I've joined their ranks, although I don't actively go and tell people don't go in there because nobody goes in there, ever.
So far in this tour of the mystical, we've explored northern Utah. But now we're going to take a trip down south. We're going to take a trip to the San Rafael Desert, or as I call it, home. I was raised in Emery County, which is a geographical unit about the size of Connecticut, with a population of the good Arby's on Wednesday night. Okay, maybe it has more people than Arby's, but definitely fewer than 10,000. Most of the county's residents live in one of seven very small towns clustered around Highway 10. They are Huntington, Cleveland, Elmo, Lawrence, Castledale, Orangeville, Farron, Clawson, and Emery. And yes, I know that's eight towns, but Cleveland and Elmo are basically the same town. In fact, in Emery County, we call it Clemo. EC pedants will probably also ask why I didn't list Mullen and Moore, and the answer is, Mullen is a road, not a town, and nobody lives in Moore. But I digress. If you know Emery County, you probably know it as the home of Goblin Valley, where they shot part of Galaxy Quest. Or maybe you've been to the annual Joe's Valley Bouldering Festival. But more likely, you've driven through the long, boring stretch of I-70 that cuts through the county's southern half. What you can't know, unless you've lived there, is that Emery County is haunted as hell. I'm Dory Peacock, and this is the Ghost Box. It's hard to convey with just words the openness and emptiness of the San Rafael Desert. My dad's friend from Boston came to visit once, and the sheer amount of open space gave him whatever the opposite of claustrophobia is. The terrain is rugged and dramatic and rocky. I often imagine what it must have looked like to European explorers when it was discovered. If you've seen any westerns from the color era, you have an idea of the palette. Browns, reds, tans, a few blues, and very, very few greens. The sky is a deep azure blue, and it feels impossibly far away. It's also quiet. Little vegetation means few animals, few people, and very little noise. In one of the tiny towns, you might hear cars now and then, or some rumbling and buzzing from the power plant. But on the desert, or in the mountains, there's nothing but the wind. The longer I'm away from Emery County, the more vast and wild the land seems to me. Every time I go home, I'm struck by how dark the nights are, with only one street lamp per block and no large buildings or businesses open past 9 p.m. I've known all my life how dangerous the desert can be, but it scares me more every time I drive through it after dark. I've heard all my life how people die, disappear, go mad on the desert. And some of them, even the ones who die, hang around. So I've decided to devote the next two episodes to telling some of the ghost stories from the mountains, the towns, the desert where I grew up, and the people who grew up with me. We're going to start with one of the scariest places in the county, the Old Emery Church.
The old church was built, started construction in the 1880s. It was finished in the 1890s. It is the longest standing non-temple church building that has not been touched. So it was original, which was really cool if you think about it.
This is Andrew. He's from Farron. He went to high school with my sister. The church he's talking about is a tall, yellow, clapboard-style meeting house in the center of the town of Emory. I'm not sure that it's the oldest LDS building in the world, but it's certainly the oldest in the county and among the oldest in the state. It's still the largest building in the town of Emory. In true 19th century pioneer fashion, it was built by local artisans using locally available materials. And its design is unique for LDS churches of its era. See, most churches built at the time are brick buildings, built in a neoclassical style that was popular at the time. They have things like pointed arches, Gothic spires, Doric columns, and mixtures of that Beaux-Arts style. The Emory Church, by contrast, is built in sort of a New England meeting house style. It's just a simple rectangular box with a square bell tower on one side and wood siding all around. Its construction techniques are kind of singular, too. Andrew knows all about it since he worked on renovating the church in the early 2000s.
So we get this job and we have no idea what we're facing. There are no blueprints. There's no master print of anything. We literally have no idea how this was built, what we're going to find. And it was built according to 1880s, 1890s standards. So you can literally find anything. And it was cool. Once we got in there, you find like all of the siding was tongue and groove. So every piece of wood that you see on that church was hand carved by somebody, every single one. And there's thousands of pieces and they're hand carved to fit that specific place. You can't interchange them. You can't move them. So it was really a very detail oriented task. As we removed the siding, we had to number it and letter it just so we wouldn't lose it. And it had to go back exactly that same way or else it's not going to work. It's not going to look good. So we start peeling off the siding and we find adobe brick. So this hasn't been used probably since that time. And it was used for insulation. So these people had taken the mud either from the basement or the surrounding creek and literally formed and cast bricks. And then they stacked these bricks all through the bottom to the top, probably 40, 45 feet through the walls. And we'd never seen anything like it. My boss has been in construction for 50 years now, 60 years now. He's never seen anything like it.
As long as I can remember, there have been rumors about the church being haunted. Which makes sense. It looks haunted. It's always been sort of abandoned and shabby and run down. When I brought a friend home from college for the holidays, we drove past the church and she said it gave her a bad feeling. And for all that, it's never been torn down. Which makes sense. It's a historic building and the most iconic thing in Emory City. Heck, it even has its own Wikipedia page. So it just sits there, lording it over all the other buildings, while it decays, like the corpse of a dead ruler. But in the early 2000s, the city undertook the renovation project that Andrew worked on. But even after the renovation, the church didn't seem to have much use. I've always wondered why the city would just let it sit fallow after all the time and expense of refurbishing it. Well, what happened to Andrew and his crew might explain it. I'm gonna let him take it from here.
So the building outside had a huge crack that had started on the northwest corner and had gone all the way up to the roof. And this is a crack in the wood. And that was from the foundation sinking. So my boss said, we got to save this. We're going to try to save this building. It's historical. Let's keep it. Okay. So the problem is the church was built on an underground creek, which is weird because we're in the high desert. For some reason, they didn't know or they didn't know, they didn't care. They built this church on top of an underground creek. And over the years, one of the corners had begun to sink because it was literally on top of the creek. So they had a sump pump put in, which would suck the water out in the crawl space. Now the crawl space was about 3.5 feet tall, mud floor, and old. I couldn't tell you how old it is. I guarantee you, us being down there and where we went, and many times we had to dig our way to get to the corners of the building. So we're talking decades and decades that nobody's been down there. And it was a lot of mud and water, obviously, because of the creek. The walls are literally lined with bricks. Very dense clay adobe bricks. But what that does is that makes the building extremely heavy, which makes sense as to why it's sinking. So what we have to do now is take all of the bricks out, all of them, and then we're going to raise up using trailer jacks, raise up the entire building, and then pour footers and a foundation underneath it. So this entails a lot of shovel digging and a lot of crawling and a lot of brick hauling, like more than you'd ever want to do in a lifetime. And the kicker is we had to do it from the bottom all the way to the top. So we're in the crawl space, we're peeling off tongue and groove wood, and then we're pulling bricks out. The problem is, as you can imagine, if you're at the bottom, you start pulling bricks, the top bricks are gonna fall. So we gotta start from the top. So this church has one of the craziest attics you've ever seen. Like, it's like out of a movie. Every piece of wood, they're called struts for the roof, every single one is hand carved. Every single one. It's amazing. Like, you get up there, I don't know where they found the trees to make this, because we're in the middle of the desert. So they must have had them shipped in, or they went down to Fish Lake or something. And they carved these by hand. So the arch on every single truss is a different angle because they're hand carved. So it was cool. It was cool to see it. But it has a bell tower, and the bell tower hasn't been in use for 70, 80 years. And there's no longer a bell in there. But what that did was it allowed birds to get in there. So you're in this attic, and it's probably 15 feet tall. So it's bigger than your normal attic. And it's got a really sharp angle cutting down to the sides where you had to get the bricks. So going towards that angle, you ended up on your belly, basically straddling a strut, a piece of wood, trying to pull bricks out. And it was very difficult, and you had to be small to do it. So of course, there I am. The other thing is after decades of birds being up there, it was full of feathers and dead birds. And I mean full. Like, you couldn't even see the struts. And then as I'm trying to stand in between struts to get bricks out, it's easily 48 to 52 inches. So you are literally wading in bird feathers and dead birds. But we found easily 200 to 300 dead birds up there, like they're decaying corpses. So it's anybody's guess, and really gross, by the way. So I wore a respirator, and I'm up there wedging myself in between these struts and the ceiling, trying to peel out these 100-year-old adobe bricks and not break them, because we're thinking we may want to put these back in here if we can get this done, try to preserve it as a whole. Let me just paint a picture of the church itself. So you walk in, it has north doors and south doors, and then it has doors underneath on the east side underneath the bell tower. we could not get those doors to work. They will not open. I don't know when they closed, but the floor shifted. You can't open them. So we would go on either north doors or south doors, and you immediately walk into an open gymnasium with a hardwood floor. So you walk in, you're in the open gymnasium, it's got a hardwood floor. On the left, you look over, there's a set of stairs, and those stairs start at about 9 feet. So if you're standing there looking up, there are stairs that start 9 feet above your head. So the only way to get up there is with a ladder, and that leads you up into the room directly underneath the bell tower. So that is on the west side. So if you walk in through the north doors, there's this open gymnasium. It's probably 3/4 of a basketball court. You walk in, and on your right is a stage where they used to do plays and other things, like an actual stage. And that's elevated probably 4 feet. So if you go up on the stage, there's a door that leads into a little kitchenette area. If you walk into the kitchenette, to the right, there are two doors. One door is a closet that they kept cleaning supplies, whatever they needed there, just dead end. The other door is a really old, non-working bathroom, and it has a window. So there's a window in the bathroom, and then there's a window on the south side of the kitchen. And then there's windows in the grate, like in the gymnasium. So the only way to get into this attic, so we had to devise a way to get in there without damaging, doing the least amount of damage possible. There was no attic access, none. So we were easily the first people to ever go up there since it was built, since it was completed. And what we did was we went into the bathroom, we peeled off the ceiling, and then we crawled up in the attic there, because that would be the least visible, do the least amount of damage for us to get up in there. That's how we got into the attic. So I would spend a lot of time, I'd walk in, jump up on the stage, walk through the kitchen, into the bathroom, climb up the ladder into the attic. That was where I was working most of the time. The crawl space, if you walk in, there's the stage. If you head south, there's just a tiny little door that looks like it'd be a closet. You open it, really steep, old wooden stairs descending down into the crawl space, which is mud floor with wooden pillars to hold up the structure, and a ton of water and a ton of mud and a sump pump, a really loud sump pump. Most of my other coworkers were working down there. And while I'm up there, I get the tongue and groove off, I start peeling back bricks. One of my coworkers, I can hear him screaming, and I mean screaming. This is a big building. I'm in the attic. I have 4 feet of insulation. We have a roof. We have a huge gym. We have a floor. And he is down in the crawl space, and he is screaming bloody murder. And I can hear him. And I'm going, what is going on? And we have, this is back in the old days where earbuds and stuff, that didn't really exist. So we had like a boombox that I would play CDs in, which don't exist anymore. And I could hear him over that screaming, screaming and screaming and screaming. And I finally go, geez, he's probably hurt himself. Something fell on him. I don't know. So I rush over to the ladder. I crawl down in the bathroom. I run out through the kitchen. I jump down the stage. I'm looking for him. Can't see him. He's still screaming. He's got to be in the crawl space. I go in the crawl space. I walk down, and we had turned the sump pump off because it's so loud. You can't communicate, can't hear anything. And I walk over to him, and he is literally in the furthest corner with a light, and he's just frozen, just sitting there screaming. So I walk up to him, and I start saying his name. He's kind of non-responsive. He finally says, are you really there? And I said, yeah, dude, what the hell? Like, what's going on with you? And he goes, somebody just talked to me and then touched my neck. And I'm thinking, his brother worked with us at the time. We had a couple other guys who worked with us. I thought they just played a joke on him. And I said, okay, somebody touched your neck. Dude, come on. Are you kidding me? You're screaming like a little girl. What is going on? And he turns around white as a ghost. And he's like, I'm serious. Somebody grabbed my neck. I turned around. Nobody was there. And I said, okay. All right, well, let's go. I'm here. Let's go. We go up. He goes out into the truck, sits there, refuses to go back in. Will not go back in. And this is probably a 3-month job. And he literally told our boss, I will never step foot in there ever again. And so my boss had to find another job for him to work on. And he did. So anyways, obviously we have probably 6 or 7 workers. It all kind of starts buzzing through us how, you know, he's being a baby. He just didn't want to do any hard work. So he's getting out of it and trying to find a job with less difficult work, because it was miserable. It was not a fun job at all. But the interesting thing is we, every day we were there. So we worked there Monday, sometimes through Saturday, 10 to 12 hours a day. Every single day, somebody from that town would pull up and tell us how crazy we were for even going in that building, let alone going in there and spending 10 to 12 hours a day. Every day. Old people, young people, didn't matter. They would come and tell us, you are crazy. You guys are insane. You have no idea what you're dealing with. And we just laughed. And I'm a skeptic by nature. And so I'm just like, dude, whatever. And yeah, I mean, I believe in spirits and stuff like that. I don't believe in ghosts. Like, I don't believe that somebody's trapped in some ethereal realm and they're just stuck. And for some reason, they choose some crotchety old church to stay stuck in for years. Like, that makes no sense to me whatsoever at all. So logically, if you believe in spirits, I know it's not super logical to believe in them, but if you do and you believe what I believe, they're going to be doing something else. They got better things to do with their time than sit in an old dingy yellow church and wait for people to show up. So I don't believe it. His story gets out and the locals start saying, oh, you need to talk to this guy. You need to talk to this guy. And finally that guy came and he was probably in his 80s. He's dead now. And he literally came with, and he had a cane. So he showed up with the cane walking down the sidewalk and he refused to step on the grass, which was the church property. And he just started hollering at us. He said, hey, come here. Hey, come here. I got to tell you something. And we're like, okay. So we go over and start talking to him. And he tells us the story where he was tasked with making sure the church was locked up. And because kids were breaking into it and they're doing, you know, what kids do. They weren't damaging it, but they were breaking in and like scaring each other and whatever else. So he was tasked with making sure it was locked up. Well, one night he went and he saw somebody standing in the window. And so he thought, oh, I got you now. Now you're in trouble. And he calls a sheriff's deputy who literally lives 2 blocks away and says, somebody's in the old church. We need to teach him a lesson. Come down here. Okay. So he shows up. They go into the church. He's got the key. Nothing. They can't find anybody. They're shining lights. They check the windows. None of the windows open in the main. The kitchen window's too small to crawl through. The bathroom window's even smaller. They can't find anybody. So he thinks they're in the crawl space. They're hiding in the crawl space. We'll get them. They open the door and he goes down there and the sheriff's deputies kind of wandered around, you know, just looking around the rest of the church for somebody. And he said while he was down there, he saw somebody kind of further off down in the crawl space and he started yelling at them and they didn't respond. And as he crawled closer to them, they seemed to get less real, is what he said. Like they started to fade. And then somebody grabbed his neck and said, you he said something like, "You don't belong here, get out of here," or something like that. And he started screaming. The sheriff's deputy came to the steps, said, "What's wrong? Did you fall?" He said, no, I got to get out of here." And he literally hightailed it out of there, has never gone back in. So he's there telling us the story. My buddy, who had a similar experience, his brother's working with us. His brother tells him that story, and his brother's done. His brother won't go back, like refuses to go back, won't go back working there. Now we got two people, and they're saying the same story, and they're both really freaked out. So he's gone. So we're down to me and four other guys. And unfortunately, the four other guys are all really tall. And so I'm the shortest, I'm the smallest. I get all of the crawl space work and the attic work. And so I literally spend my days every day by myself, wearing a mask up to my armpits and dead birds and feathers, or down in the crawl space on my belly in the mud, chipping out bricks, adobe bricks. And it was not an enjoyable experience. So when I started noticing things happening, I was still a skeptic. Two other guys had experiences where they refused to go back and work there. So it was now down to me and one other guy. So we hired a new guy. And the other guy is 6'4". He's a big, big dude. And it's just me and him that day. And we're working. And I hear the sump pump turn on in the basement. And it's not supposed to be on because it's loud. And that's where I was working. So I get mad at him because I'm thinking, why would he turn that on knowing I have to go down there and it's so loud, it's like deafening. So I go down there. As I'm walking down, the sump pump turns off. And so I think, oh, he's down here already. He heard me coming. He turned it off. And I walk down there. Nobody's down there. I look over at the sump pump and it's unplugged. And I'm going, okay, that's a little bit weird. Maybe I imagined it, whatever. Maybe it had like a buildup, an electrical buildup, and it like just triggered on and ran for a little bit until it was done. Whatever. Just I'm not gonna worry about it. I go back upstairs and I hear what I think. He's in this little kind of like closet underneath the bell tower. And so I walk over to him to basically say, "Hey dude, what, you know, did you turn on the sump pump? Did you hear it turn on? Like, I just want some sort of validation that the sump pump actually turned on." And I open up the closet. He's not in there. I turn around and look back towards the stage, and I see somebody walk in the kitchen, from the kitchen into the bathroom, which is the only way you can get to the attic. And so I think, oh, he's going up in the attic, or he's going back. And so I yell at his name and he doesn't respond. And I yell at his name again, doesn't respond. And I'm like, oh, he's playing tricks on me or something. So I walk over to the stage, I jump up, I walk into the kitchen, and nobody's in there. I walk in the bathroom, nobody's in there. So I think he went in the attic. And what's funny is he doesn't like heights at all. So him going in the attic would have been a pretty big feat. And him even fitting in the hole to get in the attic is a big feat. It's a small hole. So I'm like, he must have gone up in the attic for some. So I, you know, climb up into the attic and nobody's in there. And I call his name. And I call his name again, and I hear him respond to me, and he's outside. And I'm going, okay, all right, this is kind of freaking me out. So I go down the ladder, I walk into the kitchen, I walk out of the bathroom, in the kitchen, onto the stage, jump down. And when you get kind of freaked out, you move a little bit quicker, and I quickly move to the door, open it up, and he's sitting out there near the truck eating his lunch. And I said, dude, tell me you were just in there. And he's like, no. And I was like, okay. He's like, why did you turn the sump pump on? And I was like, you heard that. And he said, yeah, I heard that. I went, okay. And you weren't just in the kitchen? And he's like, no, I went over the porta potty and then I came over here. I've been out here for probably 25 minutes. So I'm officially freaking out. And now you got to picture this, because all I have to look through is a little doorway, but I saw somebody cross the doorway into the bathroom, and I am 1,000,000% convinced that I saw them. And they had a white shirt on, and he had like a dark gray shirt on. And I thought, okay, this is officially freaky. And he said, dude, you're kind of pale. What happened? And I'm thinking, I'm not going to tell him, because if I tell him, he might not come back to work here, and I will be stuck working this place by myself, which is now the last thing I want to do. And I just said, nothing. I'm just, you know, kind of just, it's nothing, whatever. And by the way, I did re-enter the church. I did go back in the attic. Yes, I was spooked. I kept the CD player blasting loud throughout the entire day to kind of keep it at bay. And I just had this spooky feeling. Like, that's all I can say. Just this, it's just uncomfortable. The only way I can describe it is you just feel uncomfortable. It's like sitting in a doctor's office awaiting test results that could be potentially really bad. It's that feeling. And you don't know why you're feeling it. There's no reason for you to feel it, but it's there. So we leave for the day. And we drive back. It's about a 15-minute drive back to the town where we live. And I get a call at 8:30 p.m. And now it's about to get dark. This is summertime. It's about to get dark. And my boss says, I need you to go down to get the key to the Old Emory Church. And I need you to retrieve the ladder that's in the bathroom, because we have a project at the power plant tomorrow. We need that ladder. It's the only ladder that can be on power plant property, because it's fiberglass, so it's rated for electrical stuff. And I'm like, no, I'm good. And he says, what do you mean you're good? I said, no, I saw something today, and I wasn't gonna tell anybody, but I'm good. We can use another ladder. He's like, we can't. All of our other ladders are metal. They won't even let it on power plant property. That is the only ladder we can use. You have to go get it. Okay. So I called every single one of my coworkers, 9 of them. I called them and told them, this is what the boss asked me to do. Will you come with me? And every one of them said, absolutely not. No way. So I spent probably 40 minutes, which was in hindsight a bad idea, trying to get somebody to go with me. In that time, it's gone completely dark. There are no lights in this place at this point. We've cut off the electricity. And I'm thinking, okay, so now I've got to drive down there. I got to get the key. I've got to get a really big ladder. I've got to take it down inside a really small bathroom and then carry it through the kitchen, through the doorway, over the stage, down the stage, out the doors. So I'm planning it all out in my head, just thinking, okay, I can do this. We got this. No problem. I'm not scared. You know, I'm tough, whatever. So I drive down to pick up the key. We have to get the key from the mayor, by the way. It's the only person who has the key. And so I meet the mayor, and the mayor looks at me and said, you're going by yourself. And I said, yeah, I just got to go grab a ladder. And she said, you're crazy. And I said, no, I just got to go run and grab a ladder. She said, you're crazy. And she just shook her head and she handed me the key. I was like, Oh, that's a good way to start this off. Okay. I was already freaked out. This isn't helping. Okay. So I pull up, I back the truck up on the lawn as close as humanly possible to the doors. Like I just want to be as close as possible. And I'm sitting in there in the truck and the radio starts acting weird. And I just installed this new radio in this truck. It's brand new, works perfect. I had an antenna on it to where we could pick up X96 and K-Bear 99, these stations that only exist in Salt Lake. But with this antenna, we could pick it up. It was awesome. And I'm sitting there, and all of a sudden, the radio starts changing frequencies and going to static and then going to almost like the AM show, Coast to Coast, the After Dark, whatever.
Creepy. Coast to Coast AM, yeah.
There you go. Yeah, the creepy one. And it's just got this guy talking, and it's almost imperceptible. Like, I can't really hear what he's saying. And then I realize I don't want to hear what he's saying. And then I go, okay, I messed up the wiring. I installed this radio. I messed up the wiring, obviously, because it's malfunctioning. And I just go, okay, I just got to get out and go. And I hop out. And it's about 9:45 at this point. It's pitch black. It's then that I realize I don't have a flashlight. I don't have a flashlight. I didn't bring one. I didn't think to bring one. So I spend 15 minutes literally tearing that truck apart looking for a flashlight. None. There is not one. Okay. So now what I got to do is I've got to take the truck. I got to turn it around. And I got to put the high beams on through the windows so I have some sort of light. So I pull the truck around. I turn on the high beams. I get it at the right angle to where, like, I actually put adobe bricks down on the ground and pulled the truck tires up on it so it'd get a better angle to shine the lights in there. Like, I'm doing everything I can to avoid going in this place. And now imagine the lights are shining through the main windows, the biggest windows, into the gymnasium, but up on the stage and into the kitchen and into the bathroom, there's nothing. There's literally nothing. Like, there's no way to get light in there. And I'm like, this is gonna be me fumbling around in the dark. And I've gotta take down a ladder with hooks in the dark by feel. This is awful. And so I'm trying to build up the strength. I'm trying to build up like the determination. You can do it, just go, stop being a wuss. There's nothing in there. What? It's fine. You're fine. It's fine. Okay. And I finally get the strength to get in there. And I go in, and all I think is, don't look around, hop up, get in there, get the ladder, get the hell out. That's all you have to do. This is easy. This is easy. There's nothing to be afraid of. This is easy. Okay. So I hop up. I walk through the kitchen. I stand there for a little while waiting for my eyes to adjust. There was a moon, and it was probably 3/4 full. So there was some moonlight coming through the kitchen window. I do remember that. And I thought, oh, good, 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 good. Okay, I have a little bit of light in here. Good, okay. I walk into the bathroom. It is pitch black. And the window allowed me to see out. So I could see kind of outside the grass and the other church and stuff. But inside, no light was coming in. So the window was actually worse for my vision to be able to see. Because it was a source of light from outside, and it almost like dimmed my vision inside. And so I feel my way to the ladder. I get it. I lift it up. I engage the hooks. I get them to come down really smoothly, way, way more smooth than I thought it was going to go. And now I've got a 14-foot ladder in a tiny little bathroom, and I've got to maneuver it to get it through the doorway into the kitchen and then swing it around and get it through the small kitchen doorway onto the stage, and then from the stage, it's all open. I'm good to go. So I get it. I maneuver it through. I get it in the kitchen. I set it down. I just kind of start pivoting it. I move my body around to the other side to pick it up. And the sump pump turns on. And I freak. Absolutely freak. And I'm running through my mind, did I plug that in? I'm the only one who goes in the crawl space. I know for a fact my coworker didn't go down there and plug it in. Did I plug it in? And I stand there frozen just thinking, did I plug that in? And then I just go, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I plugged it in. The freaking thing's on. It's time to go. It's time we go. So I go out through the kitchen door onto the stage, and all of a sudden I get this insane feeling that says, do not look over by the bell tower. Don't do it. Don't look over there. Put the ladder down, hop off the stage, grab the ladder, get the hell out of here. Go. Go. And of course, I look up, because that's what you do. It doesn't matter. Whatever something's telling you not to do, you end up doing it. And I looked up, and there's a person in the same shirt that I had seen earlier walk through the kitchen, and they are up by the doorway that leads to the bell tower. Now keep in mind, the steps are 9 feet high. You have to have a ladder to get up there. There's no ladder there. And I think, oh shit, this is it. This is how I die, by some ethereal being attacking me in the Old Emory Church while everybody told me, don't go in there, you're crazy. Well, here you go. And I honestly couldn't look away. I couldn't look away. It was like I was stuck, just frozen. I couldn't scream. I couldn't move. I just stood there. And the person, like, you know, when somebody's walking downstairs, you can tell they're walking downstairs because their level changes and there's a little like bounce. This thing was going down the stairs, but it wasn't walking down the stairs. It was kind of just moving down the stairs, kind of gliding down the stairs. And once it reached the bottom of the stairs kind of make a right turn. So once it reached the bottom of the stairs, it was facing me, face like head on. But keep in mind, I got the whole gymnasium in between us, like the whole thing. And I think, I'm fast, I'm young, I can get out of here. The doors are propped open. I kept them propped open. And the sump pump turns off. And it's dead quiet. My ears are ringing. It's that silence. It's that loud silence. And the sump pump turned off, and immediately my ears are ringing. And that just horrible, invasive silence sets in. And I realize, okay, you got to go. You got to move. You can't stand here. And I'm staring at this thing, and it looks like a man, and an older man, and he's got a white shirt on. I didn't really look at the pants. And I just thought, just go. Just run, go, now, go. And so I did. And I mean, I'm carrying a 14-foot ladder. It weighs probably 40, 50 pounds. And I'm literally sprinting across the stage. And I slam the ladder down and jump off the stage, grab the ladder, run out the door. I must have hit the door on my way out because it shut behind me. I throw the ladder into the back of the truck, and I get in the truck, and the radio is just going haywire, just absolutely crazy. And I shut it off. And I look up, and he's sitting right in the window looking at me, just right there. My headlights are shining right onto him. And at that point, I could tell, with direct light hitting him, I could tell that he was not solid, and I was done. And I literally peel out of there. I tore up the lawn, peeling out of there. and hightailed it all the way back to my hometown. Forgot to return the key, by the way. And I went to my boss. My boss was there, and he said, "Thank you so much." He's like, "Anything happened? Anything spooky?" And then he saw my face, and he went, "Oh my gosh, what happened?" And I said, "I'm not going to tell you." And he said, "What do you mean? What do you mean?" And I said, "I'm not going to tell anybody because they'll think I'm crazy. I'm not telling anybody. I'm not telling anybody ever. But I will never work inside that church again." And he said, "You can't do that to me. I've lost everybody. Like, I can't get anybody to work here. You have to. And I made him a promise. I will work outside, always outside, never inside, always outside. And he said, "Okay, that's fine. Because most of the work we have now is the finalized work, which is outside anyways." Perfect. Came to an agreement. Great. And I honestly did not tell people that story for probably 3 years. Didn't tell anybody. Wouldn't tell anybody.
It's unclear who the ghost could be. All we have to go on is the word of one person who's long gone now.
I did find an old woman who lived across the street in a really, really old house. And she told me a freaky story that she knew the ghost who was in there, and that he would sometimes come over to her house, and she knew him before, and she was really old, like 90s.
Like she knew him when he was alive?
Supposedly, yeah. And I said, what can you tell me about him? And she said, he loved that place. That was like his baby. It was his. He just did everything to make sure that that was preserved, because I guess his father had helped build it, and he knew what went into building that thing, because it really is remarkable. You're in the middle of the desert, in the middle of nowhere, no major thoroughfares, no trading routes, nothing, and they built this thing with supplies they just had around, like adobe mud bricks. And so the people build it. It took them a long time. It was a lot of work. It was a lot of effort. So that's what she told me.
In spite of the renovation, the church is still sitting there, decaying, alone, and empty. Well, maybe not empty.
I drive by that thing. I've driven by it easily 400 or 500 times. I never look. I never look at that thing, and I don't look in the window, because every time I drive by, I think if I look, he's going to be standing in that window staring at me, and I'm going to think I've gone crazy again.
Who knows how much longer the specter of the old church will loom over the town of Emory. Thank you for listening. The Ghost Box is written, produced, hosted, and all the things by me, Dory Peacock, with help and snuggles from our four-legged production assistant, George Moosington Adams, Esquire. Yes, my cat is a lawyer. I want to thank Andrew for sharing his story with us for this episode, and thank you for listening. If you have a ghost story you'd like to share with us, you can email us at theghostboxpod@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Instagram or Twitter. We are on both at theghostboxpod. Also, we have a Patreon page now, so you can toss a coin in the box if you'd like. Patreon donors have early access to episodes, bonus content, donor gifts, and so much more. Go to patreon.com/theghostbox or click the link in our show notes. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes. If you didn't like it, I understand. No hard feelings. I'll be fine. Thanks again for listening. Stay spooky! Oh, that was really good till I sneezed. Live along Highway 10. I am gonna choke. Okay. If you liked... Oh. I was doing so good. This is a bad paragraph. Why am I bad at this, you guys?
I am recording a little bit.